Hello and welcome to the Baller BBL Supercoach podcast, coming to you through the Baller Supercoach feed. I am your host and coach of the Terrace Crew, Matt Ricks. Well, summer is well and truly upon us. We are recording 2 days post the dramatic Ashes victory over the Poms there at Perth Stadium. And I don't know about you, listener, but I am still on a high. Along riding high with me tonight to get stuck into our first ever BBL Supercoach podcast. It's a familiar face and voice, someone who has lent his thoughts occasionally to the Baller NRL show, someone who is very, very well respected in both the NRL and BBL Supercoach communities. It's Coach of Myth on the. I am very happy to welcome the Myth. Myth, how are you, mate?
Oh, I'm thrilled at that introduction, even though I think a few of our colleagues may disagree with the well-respected part, but I'll certainly take that. And yeah, riding a high after that Travis Head masterclass.
Mate, I was down on a golf weekend on the weekend down at the Mornington Peninsula, and mate, I was at the Sorrento Hotel. Days golf into watching that, days just don't get much better. Everyone in the pub just riding along Travis Head's like miraculous 100 after Scotty B ripped through them. Like, how do you even make sense of what we saw? It's just the self-flagellation of England, and it just does not get any better how much they thought they were home, and they just got absolutely trounced.
Yeah, what was it? Like 9 wickets in hand, 100 runs ahead at lunch to lose by 8 wickets by the end of the day. It's that and the footage of Stuart Broad. Couldn't get much better.
Nah, turning himself into a meme. Mate, it's been a great start to the summer with the test match. We are less than three weeks out from the kickoff of BBL and, of course, BBL Supercoach. We are launching the BBL Supercoach content and product this year through baller.live. We've got some great tools on the way to mirror our NRL product. And we're going to have a chat about them more in the preseason, but get along to head to baller.live over the coming weeks in preseason to get yourself to help build your team. We're going to have a major cash prize as well. $3,000 Baller Prize League is up and running. So make sure you head to baller.live to get involved there. $2,000 to the winner, $500 second and third. Cannot get much better than that. Now, Myth, NRL season over. What's your background in BBL? I know you're, like we said, an avid NRL player, but I do know that you're very, very keen on the BBL as well.
Yeah, enjoy the BBL. Played for about 6 years now, and yeah, just enjoy it. Like the strategy, it's a little bit different to the NRL. It's a lot about navigating the fixtures and enjoy that component of it, and enjoy just talking Supercoach. I've been fortunate to have a few good years. A lot inside that 250 to 400 mark. I think 4 finishes there. And last year was fortunate enough to finish top 50, which was
nice.
Really nice. Came home strong, which yeah, it's always nice to finish in a high.
It's a big grind, the BBL. If you want to have a good crack at the overall, you've got to be on top of it. And we are going to run through a bit of a BBL 101 episode as well later in the week, just to get everyone up to speed on the ins and outs of how to do that. But how do you find the intensity like of a BBL season? Are you sort of in there before every game once the toss happens, checking the team news, looking at squads prior to that?
Yeah, I find that you almost have to, especially when you throw in the fact of weather as well. There's so many variables, and it feels like you have to make a lot more last minute decisions with BBL. So not knowing who's bowling first or not seeing those team lists 30, 45 minutes before the game, just feels like it puts you at a disadvantage if you miss that information.
Absolutely. The weather, the long-term weather forecast, the bomb, I don't know, 96 million spent on the bomb. I'm hoping the 3 to 4 day forecast has improved a little bit on the old one, but yeah, we'll have to wait and see to see if the 96 million was worth it for Supercoach. But yeah, mate, as you mentioned, you've got a good history in Supercoach. I've been playing for, I just had a look there, 8 years. So I love BBL Supercoach. For the highly engaged player, it's fantastic. For the casual, it's good fun too. Like there's a lot of cool leagues obviously to have, and there's a lot of listeners who love a bit of the head-to-head action as well. I was lucky enough. I came top 10 a few years ago, so I was 8th overall. So I'm very proud to have that in the CV. I was 3rd at one point. Just couldn't quite get over the line, but still very, very pleased with that effort. And yeah, a couple of top 300s last year, few years as well. I feel like, Myth, anyone, if they can put a bit of effort in, you know, if you get a bit of luck, a high ranking is within most players' reach if you can kind of get the strategy right.
Yeah, I think it's almost a game where you could just pick a strategy from round one, stick with it and play the fixtures and not even think too much else about it, and you probably get a good rank.
Yeah, no, it's about committing to the grind, committing to the toss news, to the weather news, and making sure, if anything, like we're going to get into a bit of Baller 101 during the week. But I wanted to start tonight, Myth, with our Baller Blueprint. So we've hijacked this from the NRL show. And we want to talk about what is your approach to your initial team build for the season. So we won't get into too much player-specific stuff because we know there's a lot of highly owned players out there. Mitch Owen, who's actually just gone down with an injury in the last day or so. That's the breaking news. But, mate, I want to know how many players from what are the teams we're targeting first up, and how are you looking at your initial squad build?
Yeah, for me, I think you can pretty close to ignore anyone from the Gades or the Strikers unless they have a compelling reason to pick them. Now, outside of a couple there that are going to come into consideration, you're pretty much just putting a line through them, in my opinion. You've just got to play the fixtures, and they don't have a double in the first four. Even Perth gets a little bit dicey with five teams having a double before them. So you're really just going to build from those, really even the four teams that have a double in the first 2 weeks, your Canes, your Sixers, your Heat, your Thunder, they're just going to cover the bulk of your starting side. And whilst it can be tempting to get a little bit, to swerve a little bit and maybe take a few more singles, or yes, a single can outscore a double, but just statistically, it's unlikely to happen. And they just need to out average them by so much that it's almost just not worth it. So for me, it's playing those doubles as much as I can. I'd rather overdo it than underdo it.
Yeah, I completely agree. The fixture is so much more important in Supercoach BBL than certainly AFL or NRL style. We're going to get a little bit in EPL later this season. But as you said, maximising those double game week players and thinking about not just the round that we've got coming up now, but those rounds 2, 3, 4. And it's just so important to have a bit of a trade plan of, I think you can really map at least sort of the first 2 to 3 rounds of not so much the players that you want going out, but the teams that you want going out. So I know after round one, I might want to trade out Hobart and Sydney, or keep that. Who's got the double? Someone's got the double in round 3 as well, don't they? There, Hobart. So Hobart have got the double in 1 and 3. So it'll be pretty tricky to trade any of them out. But are you going in with that mindset of having very set plans for the first few rounds?
I wouldn't say set plans, but having some ideas in place, yeah, for sure. I think looking at who you want that you don't have in round 2, you're not going to be able to start with all the people that you want on the double for round 2. So knowing who you want, knowing their price points, knowing who your likely outs are, making sure that you're going to be able to afford it, and not really having to go a subpar option just to get the main guys in, is, yeah, heavily in my thoughts, and particularly when you look at round 3 with the Stars with some of their more expensive options.
Yeah, well, Glenn Maxwell's probably the main talking point there. I got a few little thoughts on Maxwell for later, just because he's such a superstar. But we spoke about the double, so we've got Hobart in 1 and 3, Sydney Sixers in 1, and then in round 2 we've got the Heat and the Thunder. Now, What stands out for you there? Obviously Hobart and Sydney round 1. How many are you looking at from those teams for round 1?
I can't see myself going in with any less than a combined absolute minimum of 7. I think more likely I'll end up with 8 or 9 across those two teams, probably with a higher proportion of Hurricanes just because they've got that second double. But I mean, if they keep going down, that Mitch Owen, if he's now a concern, Rehan Ahmed is a concern as well. Depends what their team's going to come out looking like as well at this point. But with those two doubles, I would want to be loading up on them for sure.
Yeah, the injuries make a good point, and it's also a bit of quality as well, isn't it? Because it's all well and good to have, you know, I think I'm probably going to be looking at sort of 9 or 10, hopefully, from those two. But there is a diminishing return as you get lower down in the quality of player, I guess. You might see someone like a Hayden Kerr, who has been someone really relevant for the Sixers historically, but the role just wasn't there for him last year. Now he's nice and cheap this year at 101K. But if he's sort of batting at 7 or 8 and not guaranteed those 3 to 4 overs, then you're probably better off looking at, you know, maximizing a double game week beyond round one.
Yeah, that's it. If the player's got a terrible role, if they're only bowling 2 overs, batting 8, then what across the 2 games they're going to bowl 4 overs, which is what you're going to get from someone who's got that established role anyway. So you can't pick one for no reason, but like I said, statistically, the more people you have on double game weeks, the more scores you get, the lower average you have to get the same total points. So it just makes sense to still load up on them as much as you can.
Yeah, I've had a lot of success playing this game with that exact strategy, maximizing score involvements, doubling up your captains, making sure you're maximizing the vice captaincy and captaincy loop, which we'll get into more in the next episode. But in terms of if we're going with that sort of 7 or 8 from Perth Hobart or Sydney Sixers, where are you looking to fill up the rest of your squad? You mentioned you're going no Renegades, no Strikers.
Yeah, look, I'm still going to give some consideration to Matt Short with what their team looks like. If he's going to bowl 3 to 4, if that looks like a possibility and he's opening the batting, that's pretty much a double each week anyway.
Yep.
Like most players are only going to have one facet in their game. So if someone is actually doing both on a regular basis, then that's it. It's just too good, especially with the quality of player. But that might be dependent on cash. If Mitch Owen were unavailable, all of a sudden starting with a Matt Short becomes a little bit more viable, because starting both Owen and Short is too tricky. But a couple, Heat and Thunder, have got to be in the team in preparation for round two. We only get a maximum of 4 trades. If I want to get up to at least a minimum of 6, got to start with at least 2. So a few Sydney Thunder and Brisbane Heat are going to be there. And then I do like Perth, a few Perth options. They're good looping schedule. They play the first game in rounds 1 and round 2. And round 4 is where we see a big shift in the schedule, in the way the fixtures are set up. So I wouldn't mind being ahead of the pack come round 4. So I am considering a few Perth players.
Yeah, certainly Marley Beardman high on a lot of people's radars to start the season. He starts very cheap, having only played a couple of games, I think, last year. What about Will Saltzman from the Renegades and Nuff? And I want to talk a lot about Nuffs in our Bowler 101 episode. But, mate, I think I can't see how we can have our first episode and not talk about Will Saltzman. The Renegades have got a great looping draw throughout the whole Big Bash. I think they play late in the round in a lot of game weeks. He's dual bat bowl. He's 39K. It's just so important to have that good Nuff. Are you looking to start the season with a Nuff in your initial team?
I'm going to sit on the fence and say maybe, actually. I think it's going to depend on my loops. I might be really flexible going into the round. If my players go off early, yeah, Will Salzman will be there. The other thing with him is the poor bloke's injured and he's absolutely no threat of coming in. So he's the safest loop of all time. He's not going to come on and bowl. He's just not going to appear in the team lists out of nowhere. So he's safe as anything. If I'm going to have enough, he's the first one on the team sheet, and that's not even, no one should else be considered.
No,
at this point, anyway.
No. Would that be a usual strategy for you to start with enough?
Yes. I think more than likely I'll have enough, because I'll be confident at least one of the battle bowls does well in that first game. You'll want to loop. You might want to loop a captain. With no buys in the first 2 rounds, it probably makes sense this year to just have that one locked and loaded and then maybe get rid of them when the buys become available for that looping option.
Yeah, especially if, as well, you might get injuries along the way yourself. Yeah, no buys. I think this is a bit unusual, this schedule. There's generally a few more buys from memory. Because we used to have 10 rounds. So there was a little bit more buy schedule within there. But yeah, it's a key strategy for me, the loops. I don't think you can't maximize your scores enough in this game without using it. Like you said, that tactic of staying flexible early with your initial team, having the emergencies on your bench guys, if they go off, you need to loop them. If they don't, then maybe you don't. Maybe you can hold out for another round or two to get that loop player in, because obviously you can buy Saltzman at any point and he will be useful. So, yeah, interesting. That's going to be very interesting, maybe one of the hottest debated topics as we get closer to the first game on December 14. Now, mate, is there anything else in the fixture you wanted to talk about? Obviously, Adelaide, no doubles until round 7, pretty irrelevant except short. And Renegades, same boat, no double till 8. They do, though, very importantly, those teams have no bye. Do you see that as an advantage or a disadvantage for those teams?
I mean, I think it just makes them less desirable as a whole. I think a team that has byes isn't necessarily a bad thing. You've got them as loops. You've got them as safe loops. You can hold them over those fixtures. You can trade them out on the last game of the round if you need to. It really offers a lot of flexibility. So I actually rather a team that has more doubles, more byes than no byes and one double. I don't think that's actually that beneficial. So probably, yeah, disadvantage, I would say.
Yeah. Dual position players and batting and bowling and how we want to spend our money in the team. This is a fairly hot topic every year. Bowlers tend to score more consistently. Batters the really quality players can have that severe upside, if they can get hot. But we do see some high price busts as well for batters. Do you try generally to fill your batting with those dual position bat bowlers with guys who can bowl?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's just the batsmen are just so hit or miss. I don't want to have too many of them. And I've definitely been burnt in the past by backing an international batsman and just thinking their quality. And then they
come out. Alex Hales.
Yeah, Alex Hales. Faf du Plessis stunned me the year he came around. And it just sucks. Like, they get a good rock or they get someone takes a screamer as well. I remember having a batsman as a pod one time. Or maybe it was Shadab Khan one time, and he hit a pull shot. It was going for six for all days, and it was one of the catches of the season. Maybe it was Mac Harvey or something, just one-handed, just launched in the air. I was like, are you kidding? It was like, strike rate bonus was coming. That was to get 20. It's just too risky.
Yeah. Yeah, the floor with these bowlers – it's just too high. I think that's just probably for the sort of newer listeners, getting those guys. There's an abundance of dual position bat bowl guys who are predominantly bowlers. Michael Nisa is one that, been very consistent for a lot of years that you can stick up at bat, fill your team out with bowlers, raise the floor of your team. And then the way I generally approach those batters, Myth, is if they're highly owned guys who bat only, they play early in the round, I'll just avoid them at all costs. And that can burn you because you get guys like Dave Warner last year who came out and did so well. I never owned him last season and that was pretty costly. But if I am going to take a batter, I'm going to try to get guys who are late in the round so I can stick them on my bench, put the emergency on, and then if they go off, I can loop them in, and if not, then I'll just stick to the bowlers in the batting slots.
No, I rate that strategy because you've got to figure out where to take a few people on. And if you're going to take on some higher-end players, why not take on the guys that just need one good rock and then they're not getting a good score?
Yep. To your point earlier on guys like Short or Maxwell's in this category as well, these really, really quality players who are a level above the BBL, to be frank, they're the ones who – if you can get them in, and that even if they do only have single games, they're the ones who still worry me just because they are so good and they can score tons, and then they've done it multiple times. So that they're the guys like Dave Warner, 39 years old, yeah, he's been an amazing player, amazing T20 player. But I'll probably take on big names like that with big ownership. But the guys like Short and Maxwell, they scare me a lot more.
Yeah, it's those guys that can bat and bowl. They just threaten in so many different ways. There's nothing like death riding Matt Short. You watch him get out for 5 off 3 and then you see him first opening over. The bowling and he takes 2 wickets. It's like that, a death rode for nothing. He just inevitable. And if they've got that good a role, like you said, it's almost like having a double each week. It's just, will they get the overs?
No, that's where it comes down so much on the teams and the role that you're going to, you know, project it in the team. So we're going to have the ball of projections this year, which is going to be sensational based off the lineups, how many overs we think the players are in for, how many runs they're in for. It's going to be very, very exciting and an ultimate tool to use for your Supercoach play. But when you're looking at a lineup, Myth, is that how you're approaching it with, okay, how many spinners are playing today? Who do I think this guy's going to bowl? What's the pitch doing? What's the weather like? What are the sort of some of those factors that come into it when you're thinking about those decisions that you got to make?
Yeah, I think one of the things I try to think about the most for those part-time bowlers is who of their regular bowlers is just likely not to lose one. Like you think about when Perth had just that all-out attack, that just elite bowling attack of Berendorf, Ty, Richardson, Morris, and then Agar as a spinner. It was kind of like, yes, Hardy's there, but who's losing overs to him? It just became a case of there's so much quality there, it's hard to see him actually stealing that many overs. Maybe one off Lance, maybe the ball's not turning and Agar doesn't bowl four, but if the bowlers are on, he's just not going to get it. So I think that's something I'll look at. Whereas maybe if we look at the sixes, for example, coming into this season, if Abbott's unavailable and their frontline quicks are something like Kane Richardson, Hayden Kerr, Ben DeWarshis, and Jack Edwards, whilst Jack Edwards is a batter, you probably go, he's probably more likely to get four than those guys. He's probably seen as one of the main bowlers there. So that's something to factor in. Like, what's the quality of the bowling attack? Like, strikers have a better bowling attack this season, so is that worse for Matt Short?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think the other part there is just their expectation of as to when you're picking a guy for, you know, beyond just a double game week, someone you want to carry in your squad, projecting that role longer term as well. So, you know, a guy like Kane Richardson, you and I have had a bit of a chat about in the baller Discord. He's someone who, you know, he might look great on paper. He's got a great BBL record. He's going to have a great role, probably bowling death for the Sixers, you know, traditionally a good side. But every chance he's up for a rest at some point. You know, he's 35 years old now or about to turn 35. He's got a very long history of injury, particularly in the last couple of years. So he's someone who could be a bit of a risk, even though it looks, you know, he's there on game day one, but, you know, it could be a bit of a mirage.
Yeah, and I think that's looking at the team list as well to really get an idea of who might come in. Is this a team list for this track? Sydney played Perth in that game, an Optus track. Do they run two spinners there? If Kane Richardson's in the side and they're running two spinners, maybe that's a good sign. If he's in the side but they're running one spinner, then that makes me nervous. That's almost being like trying to get an idea of what their base set of 11 is and then where they're shifting around that and what players are vulnerable. Someone like a Ben DeWarshis, he's not going to get rested. He's going to play each game. So that's got to factor that in as well. There's nothing worse than picking a guy for a double and he plays one of the games.
Now, speaking of Glenn Maxwell, mate, that's a good chance for us to introduce a new segment, which is Baller Move.
The bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Now, this is where we put up a bit of a speculative move that we're trying to make that's going to take us to glory. And, mate, I think my first baller move of the season is I'm giving very strong consideration to leaving out Glenn Maxwell and Matt Short, both very highly owned players in the game, fourth and fifth highest owned, in fact. Two of the best performing players of the year. I just think that for the reasons we spoke about with Short, no double game week, and then Maxwell, 200K, doubts about his bowling. Is he going to bowl what numbers he going to bat? He's been a bit all over the place the last couple of seasons. We do know that he's going to get time at the crease. Like, you know, he's the star player of the competition. I will say, though, that he had a very, very poor IPL. He's recently been cut by his IPL team for next season, so he's back in the auction. Not saying he's lost it, but I'm just going to say that I'm just a bit wary of Maxwell's form leading in. And, yeah, I think that that's going to be probably my move to start the season, go without those two highly owned guns.
He's a scary watch, though, when you go out to watch him bat. Maybe just switch the channel over when he's at the crease. And
mate, I'm a Stars fan as well.
Oh, no.
And he's my son's favourite player. We have to go to all the games. I don't know how that's going to work, but I think actually round one I can't go to, so that should be a piece of cake. They're actually in the last game of round one as well, so that'll be decision right up until game time.
That could be as well. Could be having a good round and then could be having a bad round very quickly.
He's won and lost many ranks for me over the years, Maxie. Although to be fair, I've generally been on the right side of him. So hopefully that can continue this season, mate. What's your ball to move at this stage of preseason that you're weighing up?
I'm weighing up trying to find a way to set my side up to hold sixes after their double. I like that they've got that bye later on, then into another double. But I think a few of their guys are just going to be very good for roles. I think Philippi is underpriced and could be really nice to just be moving around with looping the wicketkeeper position. And I think Jack Edwards, until Sam Curran arrives, role is just going to be tremendous. And I'm not going to want to trade him out. So I'm looking to try and set up in a way that I can potentially hold a couple of these guys. Even Benny Dwarshuis with his new pinch hitter role,
yeah,
and how well he's doing that. And he's just striking them from ball one. I think we're going to see a lot of 22 off sevens from him type of thing throughout the season. And that just elevates the score so much. I think I want to hold a couple of these sixes. So I'm looking at potentially setting up that way.
Yeah, Dwarshuis is obviously a no-brainer for round one, particularly now Abbott gone as well. We should see him getting, you know, death overs almost every game, I would have thought, unless they've got a bit more of a specific role in mind for him. But yeah, like you said, his batting really came on last year. And he'll play that role, no doubt. You know, I think we saw him bat as high as five or six last year at times. It's just depending on the match state. But he is getting those over. He's getting that great role. So, yeah, you can't trade out those guys with the role, even with the single game weeks. It's just a bit of the buy around the buys. But, they obviously double again in round five. So if you can hold those guys through there, I think that's an excellent strategy. What about the grounds and the fixtures themselves, as in the team that they're playing? How much weight? It's not something that I do hear people talk about it, like they're coming up against a worse team. You know, there might be like Thunder might be having a bad year, or you know, the whoever, and they say that that's an easy fixture. I don't generally put a ton of weight into that. What I do put a ton of weight into, though, is where the games are going to be played and what type of pitch is going to turn up at. How do you approach those two things?
Yeah, I think particularly for guys that you know are just going to be in and out of your side. You're getting a batsman in for just the double game week and you're only planning to hold them for just that round. You're not going to do that if they're going to play at the Geelong Stadium and then they're playing on Sydney Showgrounds where it's just spinning like anything. But if they're playing at Ninja Stadium and nearly any month at Gabba or something like that, Then you're probably going to be a bit more confident.
Coffs Harbour, if it doesn't put, as long as there's no biblical storms.
Yeah, if they're playing on a postage stamp, then yeah, get some of those batters in.
Yeah, no, it's just very important, those grounds and the types of players you're bringing in for those grounds, like you say. Double game weeks, a bit less so. Certainly, if you know, if it's the second game, it doesn't. It's not the be all and end all. We should say that. Like, it's just, you know, like you said, if they're playing at Sydney Showground, we know that's just a bit of a, you know, bit of a, you know, dust bowl is not the right term, but it's a, you know, it always turns a lot, and it's hard to get big scores there. So, a bit of a graveyard generally for batsmen, and that's not to say that they can't score well, but like you said earlier, statistically the numbers are just there. And we'll be able to see all that as we get closer to the season.
Yeah, got to follow the trends.
Myth, That's going to see us out for episode one. Nice, short and sharp. I just want to give a shout out to give us a follow at BallerBBL on socials. We got the Baller Supercoach channel, YouTube and TikTok, and then specific BBL channels on X, Facebook and Instagram. So make sure you get along and give us a follow. The other shout out is to sign up today at baller.live, join the 3K league. You will also, once you sign up, you'll get an email, you get access to our Discord, all the other baller contributors are going to be chatting in there all BBL season, particularly in the lead up. And while the games are on, it's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you get in there. We've got already over 100, 200 people in the Discord. So yeah, please get involved. The bigger the community we can build, the better, the quicker. Just going to have so much fun with BBL this season. We've had a nice freshen up from NRL. We're going to get some new AFL crew on as well. So big welcome to anyone who hasn't listened to Baller before. We are very, very pleased to have you here. Myth, we are going to be back later this week with a Baller 101 where we're going to go deeper on it, particularly things like looping, nuffs and AEs. Mate, stellar first up performance from you. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you later in the week.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys. You beauty.